All right, well, what are we discussing today?
All right, today we are talking about some scary movies that we've watched recently. Most of these are available on Amazon Prime streaming because that's the only streaming service we have right now.
But yeah, basically, we're just going to touch base on a few movies we watched, give short reviews and discussions on each, and then go from there.
And the idea behind it is these movies are really easy to find, so they're kind of recommendations, or maybe non-recommendations for if you're sitting around, you love horror movies, you don't know what to watch. We're kind of helping you out with that.
And there's no real rhyme or reason to the movies we chose. We just chose on whim, kind of like we did last time. And kind of have eclectic mix of movie types over here.
Well, this time they were all horror movies, so that's a plus for us. Because last time we kind of were like, is this horror? I don't know.
There's one in this list I wouldn't really classify as a horror movie.
I'd call them all horror movies, but that's just me.
All right, well, shall we start with our first movie, A Perfect Host?
Sure. This is the first one we watched. This is one that I had actually watched a long time ago, back when I first got Netflix, which was like 10 years ago. This stars David Hyde Pierce and some guy.
Yeah, the other guy looks like Michael Shannon crossed with Ray Liotta.
But he's like really good. I'm not saying like some guy, like he sucks. He was pretty good. But David Hyde Pierce is the standout in this movie.
I mean, the other guy's okay, but it's definitely the evil Niall show.
And we talked about this. I think the other guy has a lot of, like, physical, not comedy, but physical things that he has to do where he has to pretend to be incapacitated in a variety of ways. And I think he does it really, really well. And I think that's really hard to pull off. And I've seen it done badly, so I'm giving some props to this dude for his performance.
So basically this movie's other guy, not Niles, is a thief.
I have
a
name
thief
somewhere. Give me a second. Let me open my notes. I'm writing my notes in the notebook where I also wrote my vows.
I just wrote them as Michael Shannon's nephew.
His name was John Taylor. So, I mean, that was worth looking up because it's such an interesting name.
Yeah. Anyway, he's a thief. And he's injured after a robbery that didn't quite go right. And he's trying to hide from the cops, so he cons his way into this rich guy's house, trying to use that as a way to lie low.
And I have to say, to stop you for just a second, that after not watching it for 10 years, I forgot all about the robbery, like, subplot going into it, and I actually think that scene was done pretty well. It was pretty interesting. It was a good hook to the movie to get you interested in it. I didn't know if you had any thoughts on that part of it or not. Set to I Love LA.
It's just the setup. It's almost like as much of a crime movie as it is a...
Yeah, but I thought it was really fun.
But suffice to say, the rich mark that he thinks, you know, he has in the palm of his hand turns out to be a little bit, you know, more of a handful than he thought.
And things go awry. I keep, like, interrupting you. I'm being an asshole. It's kind of interesting to me that you really don't know his intentions when he's going to David Hyde Pierce's house, because it kind of varies from I need a place to lay low to I'm gonna rob you to I'm gonna kill you to I'm gonna let you go but don't fuck with me. Like, it's all over the place, but I think he's panicked, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's clear that he's looking to lay low.
He doesn't know his long-term plan.
Without going too far into it, at first he pretends to be, you know, a friend of a mutual friend, and then as the cover starts to fall apart, he, you know, threatens evil Niles and then immediately backpedals on it, because, again, he's not really planned it out. He's basically winging it at this point.
And Niles' name is Warwick, and not that it really matters, but it's kind of a funny name. At least that one's interesting.
And I don't want to go too...
Before he gets to Evil Niles, I think this part was really funny, and I made a note about it. A Jehovah's Witness actually tells him to fuck off when they knock on their door.
Yeah.
Which I think is a fun scene. And that character is a fun character. She's a side character, but she has so much to do with the plot. She's an interesting character.
I don't want to get too much into the plot, because I feel like this movie has... I mean, you know, going in... Yeah, looking at the cover art, that Evil Niles is Evil Niles. That he's not going to be the naive, you know, you know, pompous guy that you think he is at the start.
You know there's going to be a turn somewhere. But the way that they do it, I think is really, really...
It doesn't go the direction I originally thought it was going, and I kind of like the place that it goes. This movie pretty much rides on David Hyde Pierce's performance.
Yes.
He has all these weird little mannerisms for Evil Niles. Like, he has this odd walk. Like, he walks like...
He, like, sashays. It's like a Project Runway.
He walks like Saru from Star Trek, where he just, like, his arm just kind of, like, weirdly waves.
Okay, for those of you that Project Runway was too much of a...
Obscure reference.
Now you have the Star Trek reference that everybody knows.
That's a Star Trek disco, by the way. Okay. If you're wondering which Star Trek show it's from.
Do you mean Discovery?
Yeah.
I was like, there was a Star Trek disco spinoff. I was thinking like Persona 5 Dancing with the Stars or whatever. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen the musical Star Trek series.
So my favorite parts are towards the beginning where it's Michael Shannon's nephew trying to, run this con, and it's pretty obvious to the audience that Niles sees through it already, and he's just kind of fucking with them. And this whole kind of like,
and that
back and forth between them is pretty,
that kind of cat and mouse is really, really well done, because you'll see John lie, and then Warbuck will be like, oh really? Well, how about this? Or like, oh, you saw Julia? Let's call her.
Yeah.
And like, things like that where you can see him, like, tripping up and being like, oh, God, no. And it's kind of relatable. Anybody that's ever told, like, a little bit of a fib and got called out on it will be like, oh, shit, I've felt that before.
And on that point in the movie, you're not really sure who to root for, because you kind of know that Niles is going to turn out evil, but the other guy
is
a violent, you know, criminal.
They do a good job of switching your sympathies pretty often in the movie. There's a lot of times where you're like, yeah, go Evil Niles, and there's a lot of times where you're like, oh no, kill Evil Niles now. Like, so I like that. I like any movie that does that. I really love the psychological thriller kind of genre, and this really plays into that really well. This, if we're going to say something's not horror, this is probably the furthest from horror, in my opinion. It does have horror elements, but it's more of a psychological thriller. I think you could show this to your mom, and she'd be okay. Like, it's not going to scar your mom or your friends for life. This isn't Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah, it's almost more of a crime thriller than it is. Like, I thought going in it'd be, like, one of these Hostel-style torture porny movies, and that's really, really not what it is.
No, not at all.
Which is pleasant, because I don't particularly care for that kind of subgenre.
It depends. I'm not going to say I don't.
The other thing I really like about this movie is the editing, which I feel is absolutely fantastic.
Very good. And that's kind of what I was alluding to with saying, like, the beginning crime scene, just the frame story is really good. A lot of the shots and stuff in the beginning reminds me of Baby Driver. Not as stylized and not as good of music, because it's just I Love L.A., but just cool looking. It was cool. Lots of cool shots and stuff in there. It got me into it, and I was like, yeah.
The way it communicates the twist to you with the editing is really effective. It's a twist that could have come across as really lame, but the way it's presented to you makes it entertaining and is a constant source of just energy and
I have a feeling
presence
that
in the movie is the way they...
Some horror fans would watch this movie, see the twist, see the way it's portrayed, see the acting behind it, and really dismiss this movie, which is sad to me, because a lot of it comes off as funny, and it's not fun. It is genuinely funny, but it's funny in a really uncomfortable way.
Yeah, normally.
So, I think a lot of people would look at it as like, oh, is it supposed to be comedy? Is it supposed to be, I don't know what this is, kind of thing, because it is kind of in a place of its own in the horror sphere.
Yeah, it treads a good line, because when you think horror comedy, at least I typically think of, like, that kind
Evil
of splatstick, like,
yeah,
very broad comedy with gross-out humor type thing.
You're Dead Alive.
And this one goes for a really surreal kind of humor, but it does so without taking away from the realism or believability of the story itself, which
everything
I feel is very difficult to do.
It's very psychological and very cerebral, which I really appreciate.
I am going to briefly talk about what I didn't like about this movie, and it's mainly the third act, which, again, I'm being vague on the plot, but it starts focusing a lot and more on the crime angle.
I don't think it's necessarily the third act that you don't like. I think it's the denouement.
Well, the third act started to lose a little bit of steam for me, but yeah, the very end is what really, they have an odd twist, and it looks like it's going to end on a very unusual and interesting note to me, and I was, like, actually on board with it, but then there's one more, like, reveal that backpedals on it.
It kind of pulls the Lord of the Rings and has multiple endings. You're like, oh, cool, it's over, and then you're like, oh, wait, there's more, and it's like, good, it's over. Oh, wait, there's more. And it kind of does that a couple times.
And I didn't like this last reveal. Not only is it more a traditional ending for this kind of movie, which I was kind of digging the odd kind of resolution that was you know, shown before, but it also doesn't make sense from a story structure. Like, it's one of the things I don't think actually could have happened, depending on how that character acts.
And I'm going to continue to argue with you a little bit on this, just because I think I might have missed something watching it. And I feel like if we go back and watch it and kind of try to see where that last little twist comes in, we might not have this opinion of it. But I agree with you right now, but I'm also hesitant to be like, yeah, because I feel like somebody that has watched this movie will be like, that is explained. But it's in this scene, you can see this happen, and so I don't want to go ahead and full on just be like, yeah, that's a detriment, because I'm not sure.
It's just, and you know, in the ending's my biggest bugbear, but the third act is like, most of the movie's spent with these two characters, and, you know, basically their interactions with each other.
And then it goes more wide.
And then, and then the third act is like, well, let's go back in time and look at these cops and look at his girlfriend and get into these characters. And it's like, well, if they were going to be bigger parts of the movie, you probably should have focused a little bit more on them earlier.
There's little flashes of it.
Yeah, you see a little bit of the girlfriend, but
it's not enough to really make you go, oh, yeah, this is great. Which, I get that. I think it's definitely worth a watch.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite of the five we watched on this go-around.
Wow.
Like I said, I'm being a little bit critical on it, but the stuff I loved outweighs the stuff I didn't like.
It's definitely something. It's definitely up there for me. It's not something that I feel like, you know, was like, okay, I don't get it, but I think it's worth a watch. Like I said, I think this is something that is good for anybody with any sort of interest in horror. I think this is one to show your non-horror friends if you're sitting around and you want something to watch and you're like, I don't know, I don't want something too scary. This is a great one.
I would still call this a horror movie, but it's very yeah, it's nowhere near as extreme or as, like,
it's more tense, of a psychological,
but it's
horror.
Not scary. Like, David Hyde Pierce surprisingly is menacing. It's kind of hard to imagine a menacing David Hyde Pierce, but he pulls it off. He carries this movie on his back.
He's
probably
clever. Yeah. So he's really conniving, and that is scary. And he's a little unhinged. Well, he's more than a little unhinged, and that's scary, too, not knowing what's going on in someone's head. But, yeah, I definitely give this a recommendation. I feel like if you have Amazon Prime, which you probably do, check it out.
Yeah.
This is called The Perfect Host.
Oh, A Perfect Host, I think.
I wrote The Perfect Host. Oh, I don't know if that's right or not. But Perfect Host.
Yeah, if you search Perfect Host, you found it.
And I feel like reiterating that because there's Host, The Host, The Host again. So,
well, the Korean Host is pretty good. I don't know about the Stephanie Meyer Host. I have a feeling that one's probably not so good. I haven't seen that one.
If you like Twilight, it's Twilight again. From what I've heard, I actually watched Your Movie Sucks on this recently, so I know a little bit about it. I've never seen it. I've never seen The Host either, the Korean one. And we did watch The Host on Shudder, and it was okay. So those are all that's the host rundown for you. But
wait, what's the other host?
The webcam one.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
So if you're looking for a host, you're not going to find this movie. You're going to find 10 other.
Yeah,
hosts.
You got to add
Look
perfect
for
in
perfect
there.
Perfect Host, and you'll find it. Because I had that problem too. I was like, it's called The Host, and it's like not called The Host. You're not going to find it that way. You're going to find 20 other movies. Okay, next we watched a movie that was your recommendation, something that you watched in childhood, and you loved. This is a movie I took no notes on because when I watched it, I was like, what the fuck? The entire movie. And I was like, what would I even write? I don't fucking know. This movie is so bonkers.
Yeah.
And that movie is A House from 1980...
80-something. I want to say it's like 85, maybe.
Mid-80s.
All right, so I need to do a little bit of explanation here. So, first of all, this is the American house, not the Japanese house.
Which I have not seen, and I want to because it looks bonkers.
So
more
this,
bonkers than this one.
So this is a movie I watched when I was little, and I remember just absolutely loving this horror movie. It was like per the perfect, like it was scary, it was funny, like, oh, I love this horror movie.
And that's something that I kept thinking while we were watching this. I was like, is this made for kids? And it was made in that weird time period of movies where... everything was kind of like, throw something for the kids in there, throw something for the moms in there. And it's, because I'm sure, like, I don't know if there are action figures made in this movie or anything.
No, I don't think this movie is big enough for action
figures. But I could imagine that happening. I could imagine kids playing with toys from this movie, because it's one of those movies where kids could definitely watch it. I think it is R-rated. I'm not sure. There are some fucks in there. Fucking, but fucks.
So, yeah, so this is kind of remind me, like, also when I was a kid, I was obsessed with He-Man when I was a little kid. And as an adult, I'm like, yeah, I remember loving He-Man. I'm going to watch the episode, see if it hits that nostalgia button. And then I watched it, and I'm like, oh my god, I was a moron.
Don't fucking listen to him. He-Man fucking rocks. Go watch it right now. It is on Amazon Prime.
And
watch it all. Skeletor is my fucking idol.
And this was kind of the same kind of moment, because I remember absolutely loving this movie and watching it this time. I'm like... what is even happening here? This...
But I didn't watch He-Man as a kid. But watching it as an adult, I fucking love it because I think it's hilarious. I didn't watch this movie as a kid, but watching it as an adult, I was like, what the actual fuck?
Right, so I guess we should explain what this movie is.
I think my issue with it, and this is before any explanation, this is just surface level, is that I don't know who it's for. And that bothered me for the whole movie.
Yeah, there's
serious... I'm like, is this for kids? I don't know.
There's serious tonal issues in this movie. So basically, the idea of this here movie is there's a Stephen King protagonist kind of guy that's like horror writer who inherits a big spooky mansion after his aunt dies. And he's writing a new book about his experiences in Vietnam while moving into this mansion. Because he's also going through a divorce because him and his wife, their child is missing. He went missing one day, and that kind of like split up their marriage.
So this guy is fucked up.
So, but he's not, because he's the
he's
guy.
He's really not.
He's
he
the
is...
guy from the Greatest American Hero.
So just, that makes him not fucked up. If you're in the Greatest American Hero, you can never.
No, what I'm saying is he's this very cheery looking guy who acts friendly and cheery to everybody. He's not like haunted or anything, or at least not overtly.
He's not a Stephen King protagonist where he's like chain smoking cigarettes, eating Doritos, and crying.
So, and he moves into this house, which is of course haunted, and the hauntings have to do with his unresolved trauma in Vietnam. And his missing child, and all kinds of comes together.
It's his aunt who fucking killed herself.
Yeah, that's the thing. Again, this movie is very silly. It's very childish in faces, but then it opens with a really grisly suicide where you just see this old woman hang herself in her closet.
It kind of reminded me of the beginning of Harold and Maude, which Harold and Maude starts with Harold, who's obsessed with death, faking suicides, and they look really realistic, and he's like trying to freak people around him out. And then he's like, haha, just kidding, I'm not dead. But it's jarring, at least the first time you watched it, and maybe even not the first time you watched it. And that kind of reminded me of that, where it's just like, grisly suicide shot, and then it's like, haha, jokes, and then it's like, dude yelling fuck, and then it's, haha, more lighthearted jokes. And the monsters are great. Really cool practical effects, which I always just... love practical effects, which not that they had a choice at the time, but the monsters are kind of like Jim Henson puppets. They're not Jim Henson though. Jim Henson knockoffs. They're like
they're very puppety, not like Muppets, but they're very. I'm trying to think of a movie that does a similar special effect. I'm kind of blanking the moment, but I mean they're either guys in suits or. Weird monstery puppet guys like the
rubbery
like the thing that chases you through the hallway in Hellraiser.
Yeah, but they're not scary. They're kind of cute. Like, we're kind of just, like, grotesque, but not in an over-the-top, like, disgusting because way. It's not Hellraiser. It's, like, a fat pig-looking thing with big lips and a dress. It's not scary.
So the problem is, you have all these really well-designed, really detailed monster costumes, but then everything is in very bright lighting.
Yes.
Like, most movies like this, it won't be in complete darkness, but the monsters and stuff will kind of be in shadow or have moody lighting to, you know, to make it look scarier.
Even if you put that lipstick monster in dark lighting, it's not going to be scary. It's still kind of cute. It looks like a hippopotamus.
It's not any goofier than Butterball from Hellraiser, but they make Butterball menacing.
He's got a fucked up, like, face. He's got weird shit coming out of him, like...
But he's goofy looking. He's a little fat guy with sunglasses and like.
He's goofy looking, but
the point is, I think those monster designs could be scary. But the fact is, he's in this big house with all the lights on all the time. So every monster and, you know, spookums you see is in complete, you know, light, which it can work in some horror movies like Midsommar. The big deal is everything's
Midsommar doesn't have a monster.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why it works. You can have a great horror movie that's done in full light. The Wicker Man is another one, which Midsommar is often compared to. That whole movie is in bright lights. It's things that are off-putting, not full-blown dude in a rubber suit. Predator is in light a lot of the time.
Yeah, but at the same time, the monster is for the most part, obfuscated.
Yeah.
And when you do see him, it's at a dramatic nighttime duel with Arnold Schwarzenegger, so... Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, you could definitely do horror with bright lights. And I don't know if they're like, we're super proud of these monsters, let's show them off. But the monsters themselves are kind of goofy. It really reminded me of Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, I was going to mention
that. Especially, there's the episode where the woman is, like, nagging or whatever, and she turns into this big, like, freaky, same kind of lipstick monster. Mm-hmm. And... It worked a little bit better in Tales from the Crypt, maybe because the budget was better. I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, this whole movie seems like a TV budget. Like, the way the scenes are shot, the way the sets look, everything just looks TV. Even the actors, there's no movie actors in this movie. It's basically the guy from Last American Hero and Norm from Cheers as his, like, well-meaning but not too sharp sidekick.
And then Vanna White. It's not really Vanna White, but it does look like her.
But it just, and I don't remember any F-bombs in it, because I kept on thinking this is like the PG-13 Evil Dead, is how I thought it to myself.
The big sergeant guy, who was also
Bull,
from TV,
Bull from Night Court.
He comes in and he's like, do your fucking best, soldier. Oh, okay. He drops like 10 F-bombs in the movie, so maybe I know it's not a PG-13 by today's standards.
Maybe I just had it in my head that it's PG-13, just because there's not a lot
and
of...
And it could have been for the time period, because you look at something like Indiana Jones, which was PG, and the heads are fucking exploding. That would never be in a PG movie today. But that's just kind of how it was, because if it wasn't PG, it was R, and it... You know, it wasn't R because there were no tits. So maybe it was PG. Yeah. I don't know. I think they say shit in a lot of the Indiana Jones movies too, but I don't know. I can't remember.
So, the scares aren't particularly scary because of the, I don't know if it's a cheapness or a lack of proficiency, but everything looks cheap and looks TV. And the jokes are very sitcom-y too.
Yes.
It's a lot of, you know...
Very slapstick
kind of stuff. He's doing something to fight the ghost, but it makes him look silly to his neighbors type of gags.
Yeah.
You know, because they come up like, hey, what are you doing? And he has to cover the fact that he was doing this crazy thing because there's monsters in his house.
I'd say, I'm not going to dismiss this movie, though. I'd say if you want something that's kind of what the fuck to put on for your friends that like Troll 2 and stuff like that, this is great. It's definitely along those lines of something that's kind of goofy, kind of fun, not really scary, but something that you can definitely laugh at, laugh with, and have a good time. So I'm not dismissing this movie by any means. I think it's worth a watch. It's just you have to go in knowing that it's some HR Puffin stuff bullshit.
Yeah. It was just such a splash of water in the face, because I just remember, like, from my recollections, you know, as a kid, this being, like, right under Evil Dead to me.
Yeah, like, oh, like it, me it is watching very it, much in the vein.
Yeah, me watching it at like 12 years old, I'm like, you know, this isn't Evil Dead, but this is like the next best thing.
If you
and watching it now, I'm like, no.
If you have kids that not. Are interested in horror and you don't mind them hearing a couple fucks, I definitely throw this.
I mean, there's
on.
Honestly not even much gore. I mean, there's not a little a lot bit. Of gore. There's a little bit most, of dismemberment, but it's almost
most
cartoony.
Of the gore is really cartoony. Like I said, if you don't mind your kid hearing a couple fucks here and there. And they really want to watch a horror movie, this is a great one. It's great for kids. Like you said, it's great if you're drunk or high and want to watch something dumb. Like, it's not to be dismissed, I don't think.
Oh, I'll tell you the other issue with this movie that kind of adds to the weird tonal shifts and the just to kind of like what's going on. This movie escalates way too early. And most horror movies or spooky house movies, it starts with, like, small stuff that you can easily dismiss, and then works its way up to, like, the complete madhouse, like, you know, Poltergeist. Where
yeah, they don't like, monster reveal within the first, like,
yeah, they don't,
minutes.
And Poltergeist, you don't open with the killer clowns and the, you know, the trees, skeletons popping out, you know. And this one, like, literally, like you said, he has monsters jumping out of the walls within the first 30 minutes of the movie. And it just becomes weird that he's just sticking around at that point.
Yeah.
And
which it kind of goes into, oh, I want to get proof of the monster.
Yeah.
I want to kind of show everybody that there is a monster but in this house. But then
it's too much too
like,
early.
What are you doing?
Yeah, you start with like more mundane stuff and then you build up to the monster. Like maybe he does something that lets the evil force get more power or
and
something.
The first
like,
monster reveal is honestly the scariest monster in the movie, except for maybe Bull's character, which isn't really a monster, it's more of like a flashback from Vietnam.
Right.
But he gets some cool makeup effects later on. But yeah, I would say don't dismiss this one. It has a time and a place. But if you're going for balls to the wall horror, you're gonna be super disappointed by this.
I will say I did like the aunt's creepy paintings. I feel
they're
like
they're great. They are really great. I would like some of them in my house.
I wish at some point during when they're making this movie, they would have realized, oh, these are cool. Maybe we should focus the movie more on this.
They could have done something with him like going into the paintings.
Yeah,
that would be really cool.
But that probably would have cost too much money because the Vietnam flashbacks. Let's just say they did not shoot on location for those Vietnam scenes.
They shot in Vietnam, LA. The paintings are definitely worth watching the movie for alone. Because whoever painted them did an awesome job. They're really fucking creepy and they're really cool. I wonder if Displate has any of them.
So we'll have to watch the Japanese house next and compare them.
Oh, we could do house versus house.
Yeah, east versus west.
And then we'll watch this house, the series house and compare that. And it's never lupus and all that. No, I'm just kidding.
If you've seen one episode of House,
you've
pretty much
seen
them all.
It's not lupus. Open the book. Take a drink. Okay. I don't know why House the show is in here. But it's not House the show. It's House the movie. And it's not the Japanese house with a funky face on the cover. It's House with like a hand on the cover or something.
Yeah, it's a dismembered hand, zombie hand ringing a doorbell.
Which makes you think that this is going to be scary as fuck, but it's a little less scary as fuck. It's scary as frick.
That's what they should put on the VHS.
Scary as frick!
And I say VHS because I don't think that's what Eric can put on Blu-ray.
It probably is on Blu-ray.
Alright, so our next movie, I think this one might be your favorite. The Poughkeepsie Tapes.
The Poughkeepsie Tapes, I think. I don't know, I'm not from Poughkeepsie. This was a 2009 movie, but you'll have no problem finding this movie if you look it up. It's pretty good.
Unlike our other movies, there's no movies with similar titles that
no.
we know of.
Yes, I really, 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 really liked this movie. But it's so far up my alley because I love found footage movies as much as a lot of people shit on the genre. It's one of my favorites. And I love, like, serial killer stuff. I mean, I spend hours and hours listening to serial killer podcasts. I have watched so many documentaries, and I watched Mindhunter, so I'm really into that. And it does so well with making you feel like this is a real serial killer. Here's some footage that he shot of his crimes, and it does it's just so good.
It's basically a fake documentary about a serial killer in Poughkeepsie, New York. And it's basically framed around them interviewing the FBI and then various law enforcement, because they, when they raid this guy's house, they find like hundreds and hundreds of tapes that he's made of various stuff. Basically all of his killings and stuff he videotaped. And they're basically talking about the footage on this tape and talking about the case, and you kind of go through it step by step on.
And I have to say, I'm sorry interrupting you again, but overall, the acting is so good that I knew it was fake. I knew it wasn't real, but everybody was so committed and so well cast. Like, that all the FBI people looked just like people from the documentaries, talked just like them. Like, it was so good. And then everybody in the tapes, everything, all the acting was just top notch and on point. And you compared this to Lake Mungo.
Yeah, it's very much a Lake Mungo style movie, except I think Lake Mungo is much better.
I think this is better, because Lake Mungo had a lot of things, which is a great movie. It's one of my favorite found footage movies, but it has a lot of things where it loses me with the acting. There are a couple characters that are a little bit weaker, and they kind of lose me.
Really?
And this one didn't. Like, the brother in Lake Mungo, sometimes he's... And it's his character a lot of the times, but sometimes he's just a little unbelievable. There's a couple of other characters that I'm not really feeling it. But as far as taking footage and making it look old, which they did... If I'm going to say anything negative about this movie, I'd say that they very, very highly edited the tapes and things to where it's, like, bright... distortions.
Yes, I actually wrote that in my note. The weird camera effects and distortions are a distraction, and they're supposed to make it look scarier, more unnerving, but to me, it had the opposite effect.
And I'm almost positive that all that is an after effect that they did, but it is supposed to make it look like an old tape that you found that has been fucked up from sitting in a closet or whatever.
But they also didn't do a good job of it, because one, they do it too much, and two,
it is very
you can actually start to see the pattern. It's obviously they just put some sort of
filter
on it, whereas, you know, real VHS will have messed up moments here and there, and this is just, it's almost like a heartbeat. The distortion effects are so even
timed
that you can actually, you know, tell it's about to happen before it does.
Yeah. Oh, it's about to flicker. Oh, it's really about to turn purple. Yeah. Which, and I will say, Lake Mungo, in its defense, all the footage looks so good. And I say that meaning the news footage looks like news footage. The camera shots look like camera shots. The you know, grainy phone film from the early 2000s looks like grainy phone film from the early 2000s. So they did an excellent job in Lake Mungo with that. The acting in Poughkeepsie Tapes was just so solid for me. And the story, I think, was a little bit better.
Really? I completely disagree. I think Lake Mungo had a lot more going on in story. There's more twists. There's more honest-to-God character work being done in Lake Mungo.
Yeah, and I think Lake Mungo is a believable story. I'm not saying it's a bullshit story. It's definitely not. It definitely had me invested. But the Poughkeepsie Tapes, to me, it was just so realistic for a serial killer. And I loved the going into the mind of a serial killer. And not to say Poughkeepsie Tapes is perfect, because it definitely has some things that took me out of it. Like, when they are profiling the killer and all the profiles are vastly different.
Well, that's the thing that got me with this movie. Well, one of the things, because I was interested, I like to appreciate it first, the killer, because you do get to see, you don't get to see his face, but you hear his voice a lot, and you see him in his little costume that he wears when he wants to kill.
He wears a Commedia dell'arte plague doctor costume with the neck frill and everything.
And a Dracula cape.
Love. Well, the plague doctor had a cape.
But anyway, his voice is, most actors, when they play a scary serial killer, want to have like a either scary voice, like either a super deep and menacing voice, or like a aping Hannibal Lecter trying to go all intelligent and stuff.
I like that he didn't, though.
Yeah, he didn't. He just sounds like a creep. He has a normal voice.
Sometimes he does, but sometimes he sounds like just a nice guy.
He breathes hard a lot when he gets all worked up. When you see him in his outfit, he looks ridiculous. Yes. He looks like a twerp.
And I think that's part of it.
Serial killers tend to be. They're kind of inflated, but they're not Hannibal Lecters, right? They're just fucking dirtbags who, you know. But then at the same time, they have, oh, this guy's the most genius to serial killer. Like, the movie spends way too much time jerking this guy off and trying to build out how genius and scary he is.
Yeah.
And I did not buy for a second they would have 25 different FBI profiles that all contradict each other.
No, they wouldn't. They would be able to nail him down.
No, I do appreciate how the moves he makes are actually fairly clever.
Yes.
It's not just the movie telling us he's clever. We actually see the different stuff he does, how he intentionally changes up his MO and does stuff to throw them off.
That was fascinating to me. I thought it was so well
done. I appreciate that they put the effort in, okay, well, what's something he can actually do that would legitimately throw law enforcement off? And they came up with something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not in law enforcement. I don't know if those tactics would actually work. But as a layman, it seemed believable to me.
And that's what I'm saying with I liked this story better just because I'm really, really into this, I guess, genre of true crime. And
fake true crime.
Well, of true crime. And then this was obviously not real. But it was definitely taking from true crime textbooks. But I mean, it does fall apart. It's not perfect. I think it's obvious that they were heavily, heavily inspired by Ted Bundy. They even have a mention of Ted Bundy in the movie, which really, really confused me because they show an interview with Ted Bundy, which is shot like from above. So nobody has to look exactly like Ted Bundy. But then they didn't say what time it's from, and the killings in this movie start in like 93 and go to the early 2000s, and Ted Bundy died in 89.
Yeah, that bothered
me. So that really confused me.
That bothered me at first, and then I realized, because it's just edited weird, because they make it look like Ted Bundy's talking about the Poughkeepsie killers.
Yeah.
And I think he's not, it's the interview where they show from, he's not supposed to be talking about that particular killer. He's supposed to be talking about
killers in general.
A killer in general, or a case that bears resemblance to.
Yeah.
Because that, I'm like, yeah, that timeline doesn't make sense. Even I know that. But looking back at it, I feel like it didn't come clear into editing that it wasn't, you know, what he was talking about wasn't literally this particular case.
Which, speaking of the Ted Bundy interview, I think that's what really does this movie for me, is the dialogue. Because when they are talking to Ted Bundy, he's like, did he rape her? Because he probably raped her. And he's going to go back and dig her up and rape her again. Because he's not turned off by maggots. That actually probably turns him on. And he likes the decomposition. And that is something that Ted Bundy did. And it was so off-putting and so creepy, the delivery of it. There's tons of stuff like this in this movie that is like described so clinically. And it's so horrific and over the top. But it's real. It's a lot of this is based on real stuff. I think you were like, oh, I don't know, that was over the top, that was kind of... And I'm like, that is
real.
The
movie...
That is...
My complaint with this movie was that it was too torture porny. And granted, you don't see a lot of it. A lot of it is left to your imagination or explained without being explicitly shown. But I didn't feel much... Like, I didn't feel scared a lot. I just felt angry because I just despised this protagonist killer.
You're not like, supposed to like him.
Well, obviously not, but I think you're supposed to be scared of him. And I just was waiting for him to get his comeuppance, and it's very frustrating.
Well, that's...
Because, you know, in the beginning of the movie, they don't catch him. That he's going to be one step ahead every step of the way. And so it's just...
Kind of a spoiler.
No, because they tell you at the beginning that they found his tapes, but they didn't catch him.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah.
But I agree with you in that it does... sort of glorify this killer, which I don't like. A lot of people will put Ted Bundy on a pedestal and say he's a genius, but he's not. He's a fucking idiot. He's a maniac. Like, he's not someone to praise. Like, the same thing with, like, Jeffrey Dahmer, Charles Manson. And that is something that I appreciate. And I do agree with you, like, when the detectives are talking about the killer, they are... kind of jerking him off a little bit.
Well, and he's methodical, but he's reckless. Like, I don't believe that he would go this long without being caught.
No.
I will say...
He was very, very similar to Israel Keyes, and Israel Keyes got himself caught because he's a fucking idiot. Like, and fucking BTK didn't know that you can't erase data off of a fucking floppy disk. Like, all serial killers are fucking idiots, and you have to be because you're one step removed from society... That you don't, you know how to fake it, you know how to fake interacting with it, but you don't know how to truly be a part of society and function in it. There's something fucked with you, you're gonna give yourself away, somehow.
You know, I've been kind of shitting on this movie, and I didn't hate it as much as you might think just from listening on me, because I tend to be more critical on these review podcasts. But
and I think it's just because I loved it, and but, you didn't like it as much as I did.
But it does have its moments. There are a couple of scenes that I thought were really effective. But again, without going too much of it, you find out early on that he captures a 19-year-old girl. And you know that he does something horrible, and the movie kind of goes through what happens with her. But there's a scene early on where you see him doing this weird... I don't even know how to describe it. Like, he's walking on all fours, and he's wearing multiple masks. And you see him at the edge of the frame and slowly creep in the view. And that's really effective.
Great. And you can tell that he, like, in his mind, he set up the camera thinking this is going to look really fucking creepy.
And yeah, because, it's all theatrics with him. There's no reason. Because he's setting up this framing for himself.
And I do have to say that the girl who played Cheryl, the 19-year-old victim...
She was really good.
Awesome. She was really good. She was amazing. The guy who played the killer was excellent. I think everybody in this movie, just acting-wise, this is a really, really solid movie. Which, low-budget, found-footage horror, that's hard to find. So, I have to give a lot of props to that. It looks and feels really great. So does Lake Mungo. And I recommend having a fucking double feature and watching both of these movies and shitting your pants.
I was also going to mention the scene with the Girl Scouts I thought was effective.
Very good.
What do you think of the use of 9/11 as a plot point? That was very jarring to me. Like, I get why they did it, sort of, but just, like, that's a weird choice to make.
I actually really liked it, because, not that I like 9/11, obviously, but I like that the point of that was to show that something really, really fucked up can happen in the news and get covered by something else, and you'll never know about it. The media does choose what it's going to focus on and does cover up stories. It's not Robert Pattinson's Remember Me, where the end of the movie is fucking 9/11 and it's supposed to be a tearjerker. It's not like, oh, hey, remember 9/11, we're going to pull at your heartstrings. It's like, oh yeah, 9/11 happened and completely wiped this news story out of the lexicon.
Oh, we'll be getting to Vampire Boy in a second.
I love Robert Pattinson, and I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago. I say it firmly now. I fucking love him. I think he's great. He can do no wrong. He's Hollywood's bad boy.
How about all that?
What do you have now?
I have Voodoo Ranger.
It's New Belgium, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why... Why do I still know a lot about craft beers? I don't know. I don't drink them.
This one's pretty good, though.
Talk to me. I'll recommend you a beer. I know so many. But if it's new, I have no idea. I haven't tried it.
I used to wouldn't drink those IPAs, but I got to taste one.
Yeah, I used to buy IPAs back when I drank beer because you wouldn't drink them and you said they tasted like soap. And then you started drinking them and now you haven't stopped.
All right. Well, we had mentioned Robert Pattinson, and so... It just so happens our fourth movie has your boy in it.
What? Did I pick this movie because he was in it? No.
Well, I was kind of curious to see it because I am a huge fan of sci-fi horror.
I wanted to see it because I love A24.
And this is High Life, the champagne of beers.
The champagne of...
But is it the champagne of movies? Let's discuss.
This is another one where I liked it more than you. But I'm not going to be like, I loved it. I did like it, though.
My biggest note on this is, what the fuck is this movie? I watched it, and I'm still deciding...
Have you seen an A24 movie before?
Yes, I've seen a lot of them.
That's all of them, what the fuck is this movie? That's what I said after every A24 movie. Or during every A24 movie.
I don't know, like...
And I've left the theater... When I saw The Witch for the first time, I left the theater just, like, so confused. and it took me days, and it hit me, and I was like, man, I fucking love that movie.
No, see, The Witch, I came on the movie, like, that. The movie kicked ass. Hereditary came on the movie, that movie kicked ass.
See, I didn't.
Green Room was A24, right?
Yes, Green Room. I love Green Room.
I came out of the movie, that movie kicked ass.
See, The Witch I was confused about for days, and then I was like, oh, fuck yeah. And then the same thing with It Comes at Night. I liked it, but I walked out of the theater going, I don't know. And then I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, that movie. So maybe the fuck yeah hasn't hit me yet with this one, but I think it will. And I really recommend it if you like fucked up shit. We watched a trailer for this movie before we watched it, because we've been duped before on this is horror, this isn't horror. And I was like, is this really horror, or is it just kind of creepy sci-fi?
It's not really horror, in my opinion.
To me, it is. But the trailer said that the movie was sexy, and I want to find this reviewer.
It's definitely sexual.
It is very, very sexual, but I want to find this reviewer that said it was sexy and be like, honey... what the fuck? Because this movie is not sexy. There is definitely sexual stuff in it. And this is definitely the opposite of The Perfect Host and House, where I'm like, yeah, watch it with your family, you know, if they can kind of handle this stuff. Don't. Do not watch this with anybody in your family. Maybe your spouse is like the limit. Don't watch it with your siblings. Don't watch it with your fucking parents.
I was covering the dog's eyes at one point. I'm like, don't watch this, Oscar. It's not good for you.
I told you to look away at one point. Right. I was like, don't watch this. When they go into the fuck box, don't watch that.
All right, so this movie is basically, it's a sci-fi movie where it jumps around timelines, but the main gist of it is Robert Pattinson is on this spaceship that's on a years-long mission. That's basically a suicide mission to a black hole where they're going to try to harvest the energy from the edge of the black hole.
Which I was unsure if they were going to harvest it or just study it or try to glean something from it. It was very unclear of what they really wanted to do with the black hole.
And at the main timeline of the movie, like I said, it jumps around, but the central part of it, it's him and a newborn child are the only living members on this spaceship. And so... And at first, I'm like, okay, that's an interesting setup. Like, one guy having to take care of a baby and manage this big spaceship by himself. That's an interesting premise. I can get behind this. And then it started jumping, you know, flashbacks and to let you know how it got to this situation. And,
yeah.
And eventually it starts doing flash forwards, though it took me a while to realize it was a flash forward.
Yeah, because it was just like, where's this random...
who's this character? Like,
coming from?
And then later on, like, oh, right. But anyway.
And I have to say that definitely, like, high point of this movie for me is the story. Which you might think sounds really stupid because the story is very disjointed, but... The lore, I guess, the background of this movie is just really fascinating, that they put these young people, specifically young people, who were in prison, either life sentence or on death row, in space to do this mission, saying that they're going to lighten their sentences, knowing really that they're fucking monkeys, basically, and putting them out into space, where even... down to the fucking doctor on the ship, everybody is a fucking criminal. Is such a fascinating premise.
Yeah, I was really struggling with it for a couple of reasons. Like, one, it's like, okay, if this mission has a low chance of survival, so you're sending death row inmate down like a Dirty Dozen type situation.
Yeah, Suicide Squad.
You're also really lowering your chances of the movie or the mission being successful by putting a bunch of violent criminals in there instead of trained astronauts.
But this is not unprecedented. Not that we've put people on a rocket and launched them into space, but we've put so many animals on a spaceship, shot them into space knowing we were going to fucking kill them.
Yeah, but...
And it's the same thing, which is a terrifying premise. And based in reality, it's got one foot in the door of truth.
But we were doing that when we were trying to figure out the basics of space.
And it, that's the point of this movie.
You can't have,
a
chimpanzee harvest energy from a black hole.
The point of this mission is what happens when you fly someone towards a black hole. I think they gave them a mission, but they were just more like, what happens? Let's see.
The
other point is, let's have a baby in space and see what the fuck happens to it. Like,
yeah, the fertility stuff didn't make any sense to me.
I think it was really just, can we have babies in space? Let's find out. Like, that, and then it became the doctor's obsession.
And again, maybe I'm looking at it at too much of a straightforward or literal manner, but like, it's like so much things like just kind of bugged me. Like, they keep mentioning that the radiation is what's killing the babies, and the radiation is slowly killing most of the crew, because there are, you know, there is radiation in space, but at the same time, if your objective is to get as close to a black hole as possible, then radiation shielding has to be your primary focus. Otherwise, everyone's going to get really, really dead on your ship before you get anywhere close.
Or it's a Tuskegee experiment, and you're trying to find out what happens when humans undergo a lot of radiation. Can you still have a baby under this circumstance? I think there's a lot of fuckery going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
That is meant to kill them.
And I thought about that too, but then it's just kind of a, like, those ships can't be cheap. Like, these are very advanced spaceships that they're sending out.
Yeah, but they also look like fucking shipping containers. I think this is far enough into the future where they're just like, let's launch this bullshit into space and who cares if it comes back kind of thing.
The other thing that I could not take out of my mind while watching this movie, and again, this is just very minor detail, it probably didn't affect the movie as a whole, but the one of the first scenes you see is Sparkle Pyre jettisoning the corpses of his fellow crew because the cryo unit that he was using to store their corpses is breaking down. He needs to conserve power, so he just, you know, drops them out the airlock, and you see them drop, you know, one at a time. And I was thinking, you know, later on in the movie, they said they're moving at 99% of the speed of light, which is obviously quite fast. And I'm like, well, each one of those bodies then is a doomsday weapon now, because eventually they're going to hit something. Each one of those bodies is traveling at 99% of the speed of light. They're going to eventually hit like a planet or asteroid or something. And each one of those bodies is just going to explode, whatever the fuck they hit.
But they show,
like, it's going to be like the Death Star.
They show him jettisoning the bodies, though, and they are in, like, a slow free fall.
But that's only because it's in comparison to the ship, which is continually accelerating. There's no drag or resistance or anything to slow those bodies down. They're going to continue moving at 99% of the speed of light.
I don't know how
so
space works.
So, eventually...
but it looked really fucking cool.
Made a cool shot, but eventually each one of those bodies is going to hit some sort of planetoid. And it's probably going to be really bad for...
Eh, it'll just be a big dent. It'll start a new Roswell. It's cool.
It's going to start an interstellar war. Anyway,
okay.
But so yeah, that again, that's just kind of a odd thought that kept on happening. Like, man, Dr. Dibb's body is gonna fuck something up when it hits something. Anyway,
or explode before it. I don't know. Right, I don't know how space works, and so, maybe that's why I enjoyed this movie more than you did.
No, I didn't hate this movie. I'm still trying to decide if I liked it or not. Like,
I will go ahead and say I firmly like it.
It's like,
not love it. Do I recommend it to you? If you can handle weird fucking sexual stuff.
That's what's
a lot, a lot, a lot.
That's
lot
like
of really, really weird sexual stuff that's very off-putting. It didn't necessarily bother me because, I don't know, I've watched a bunch of weird shit. So, but I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. Trigger warning, rape. Trigger warning, breast milk rolling around. Trigger warning, fuck box machines.
That
have a car wash.
And sometimes turns into a furry.
Yeah, if you're into that.
But
and trigger warning for random turkey-based impregnation. So if you're not interested in any of that, please don't watch this movie.
So half this movie is like a grim space survival movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then half this movie is like weirdo French like sex drama.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, they just
and some of the stuff,
spill one beaker into the other beaker, and some, I don't know if I like what the
some of the stuff in there. I feel the like they did it is. Purely for shock. like the breast milk scene, I don't know what the point of that was. I wasn't offended by it. I'm not like, get this out of the movie, but what is the point? What is the meaning? I have no clue.
Do we want to go into the spoiler stuff on this one? Do you want to keep it vague?
I'm not going to go into major spoilers.
I had a hard time grasping most of the characters because the character interactions are so bizarre to me. Like, except for Robert Pattinson, and even he has a couple lines that are just like, what? But most of them don't seem to come across like regular, like real people. They have these weird lines and weird line deliveries, and that notes as artistic choice. But it kind of keeps me from connecting to these characters because they just randomly say stuff like, douching is for amateurs.
That scene I did not get. And I think...
only I deny her my fluids.
I think the point of...
she will be strong, like her big booty mother.
The big booty thing I didn't get, mainly because that character didn't have a big butt.
Yeah, I analyzed it thoroughly, and it's an average butt at most.
I'm glad that you did, baby. Thank you. I mean, at least have an actress with a big booty. Hollywood, right here. I gotcha. Call me. But I think the point of, like, the douching scene and a lot of other, like, really uncomfortable scenes like that are to show, yeah, you're in this spaceship, you're in prison, and all your inhibitions are gone. Like, you know, you're going to fucking drop trow and douche your vagina in front of your roommate, and that's just life. Like...
I mean, when they designed the spaceship, they were like, well, we need a fuck box, first and foremost. I know space is at a premium in a spaceship, but we gotta have a fuck box so our mad scientists can have a 5-minute Sibian session in this movie.
Mm-hmm. And the fuck box scene, or the fuck box in and of itself, I didn't really understand because both men and women use it, and it is basically a Sibian, which I thought the point was... insemination, but then she put a condom on it, which I get because multiple people are using this, but and then like jizz flows out of the box.
I think it's supposed to be soap.
Oh, I thought it was jizz.
No, because she collects the jizz from them. Like they have to manually squeeze out the jizz because they give them the beaker of jizz, and then she gives them a piece of candy, actually a pill, but
But then, like, I guess the dudes are getting in those box and getting rammed in the ass with this dildo. I don't know.
Well, the one dude mentioned that, like...
or is it different?
Maybe there's, like...
different settings.
Different attachments or whatever.
I don't know.
Like I said,
they didn't show the dude doing it for 5 minutes, and they should have. If you're gonna gender flop this shit, show a dude fucking making sweet, sweet love to a sex box. I want to see it. Where's that scene?
Yeah, there's so much that we're like, I didn't really understand... blank. It's like, could be half the notes on this movie. It's, oh man, I really want to like it.
I understood it, all right. But I don't get the purpose of it
so
sometimes.
I'm going to talk about the things I liked.
The fuck box. And the lady's tits.
Sparkle Pyre acting was fantastic. I think he's very strong in this movie.
I'm not exaggerating when I say I think he's a great actor.
He is right now.
And I will pretty much just watch stuff because he is in it. And that was kind of this movie. I was like, I like The Lighthouse.
Yeah, I was really impressed with him in The Lighthouse.
So,
and I thought,
let's see what else he does weird. And he was great.
I'm impressed that anyone came out alive in this movie with these weird-ass lines. But he came across it really well.
He did a great job.
Obviously, the scenes where it's him and the baby, he doesn't do a lot of talking except when he's talking to the baby and trying to, you know, keep the baby calm. But... he does a good job of communicating everything to the audience, even when he's being silent.
Yes.
And
this is a fantastic performance from him.
I like the look of the spaceship
a lot.
There
are a couple people that are kind of weak links, not terrible. There's no, like, terrible acting in this movie. There's a couple people that I'm kind of, like, meh on, but... the acting is pretty good in this movie.
I thought everyone but him was unnatural, and I got the feeling that it was a choice.
Yeah.
But he's the only one that I really, like, had any connection to.
I also think that when you're seeing the flashbacks, you're seeing just these...
of course, they're also drugged up.
Yes. And they do a really good job in the flashbacks of making it look like when you have a memory and parts of it are cut off. Because you come in the, like, smack in the middle of some of these memories and you're like, what the fuck is happening? And it's kind of like, yeah, I'm just kind of remembering the scene... and it was fucking weird, and there was some weird bullshit in it, but then there was also, like, this pivotal moment kind of thing. So, I don't know.
But I like the production, or the set design for the spaceship itself. I like the way the movie was shot. The movie's very well shot. It's very pretty. Even the credit sequence, which is just a night sky with twinkling stars, is very effective in the way that it works.
And the music was pretty good in that.
Apparently only had like a $9 million budget, which is very impressive. Like the black holes and everything looked very good.
Yes. The space effects are really, really good.
There's a spaghettification that is fairly impressive looking.
I thought it was a little underwhelming. Maybe it was a sound effect, but it was pretty cool.
But, visually the movie is good. Acting from the lead is good. Individual scenes I thought were effective. The story to me was a little bit lacking. I do like I don't mind that it's ambiguous.
I like the, I'm not going to say story, but I did like I said, the background, the lore, I guess, behind it was really interesting to me.
So, again, I'm still kind of processing this movie. I don't want to, like, we haven't been rating these, but I don't want to even, like, say if it's a recommend or not, because I'm still kind of deciding a little bit on myself.
And I liked the characters, a lot of the characters. Even if they were bad people, I thought they were interesting characters.
I think they had potential. I wish they would have focused more on the characters rather than the weird sex stuff. Like, I wanted to know what the deal with the pilot with the scar on her face. Like, because she was the only one that didn't seem like she was a criminal. And I'm like, well, what's her deal?
Yeah.
You know?
I would like to know more of their
backstories. What's the deal with the captain? You know, what's...
Yeah, is the captain a criminal? I don't know. He's a perv, but... he was at least nice when he asked her to suck his dick. He said, please.
All right, so would you recommend High Life?
Yeah, I would, with a caveat. Like I said, there's a lot of fucking trigger warnings on this. Also, another trigger warning, dog death. If it bothers you, don't watch this movie. There's a lot of it. If you can watch intense sexual scenes that aren't necessarily sexy, you're probably not going to get turned on by this movie. If you do, don't talk to me. Well, we won't be friends because, it's fucked up. It's not hot at all. If you can handle just a lot of sexual imagery thrown in your face, it's full on tits, vaginas, dicks, assholes, pussies, which are same as vaginas. Whatever, the whole thing's out there, and it's super uncomfortable. So if you can withstand that, or that interests you in some sort of way, then yeah, go ahead and watch this movie. If that is a fucking deal breaker for you, don't watch this movie.
All right, so you said your favorite of these movies was
The Poughkeepsie Tapes.
Mine was a perfect
Species.
Mine was a perfect host. What is your least favorite? Is there any that you wouldn't recommend, or the one that you'd recommend the least?
It's not the least, because like I said, it has its place, but House.
Yeah, I think I'd agree.
And I wouldn't recommend it. It's not that I wouldn't recommend it, it's that I would recommend it in certain situations. If you like true crime, you can watch The Poughkeepsie Tapes any day. If you are cool with weird sex stuff, you can watch High Life anytime. And I actually, like, am clamoring to watch High Life and Poughkeepsie Tapes both again, because I feel like when I was taking notes, I might have missed something. So, there is that element to it. Perfect Host, you can throw on for almost any audience. There's nothing really offensive in it. And if you have friends or family that like a thriller, I'd throw it on. Some of the language is a little saucy sometimes, but nothing that you wouldn't hear on HBO today. House, you'd have to be under the influence of some kind of substance, or just with a bunch of people who want to watch a bad B-movie and go Rocky Horror Picture Show with it, or Mystery Science Theater, and just rip it up and have fun with it. So I say House is the least recommended, but it's just you got to be in the right mood for it. The rest of them, I feel like if you're not opposed to the subject matter, go for it anytime.
I'd probably list House as my least of this bunch as well. despite my good recollections of it, you know, from childhood. And I think, like, it's more accessible than, like, High Life. And I think I kind of feel opposite. I feel like you could throw on something like House better than you can High Life or Poughkeepsie Tapes. But at least there was a real effort or, you know, a real swing for something with those two movies. And I feel like House is very, just very by the numbers and unambitious in a way that the others at least were, you know, ambitious and trying something. Even if I don't think they all completely succeeded in what they were trying to do, I appreciate that there's something there rather than just...
Well, I did give that caveat.
We bait a monster.
I did give that caveat with Poughkeepsie Tapes in High Life. I don't think everybody would like them. I think horror fans would like both of them. If you're a big horror fan and you've seen everything under the sun and want something different, yeah, absolutely go for these movies. Because I'm definitely in that boat and I'm constantly looking for something that's going to elicit a reaction out of me because it's harder now. The horror is like a drug and you get your fix and you're like, okay, that was great, but it didn't scare me. I want to be scared. I want to be fucked up. And if you have that mentality, both Poughkeepsie Tapes and High Life I highly recommend because they will disturb you in very different ways, but they are disturbing movies. And to me, that's a good thing because that's the way I look at horror now. The Perfect Host, I think it's great, but it's a great movie for any time. You don't have to be a true blue horror fan. In fact, if you're trying to kind of convince people around you that horror isn't as crazy as they think it is, it's a great one to throw on. Like I said, parents, families, whatever, could probably get a kick out of that movie too. And I don't think you necessarily have to be a horror fan to watch House. Like I said, if you've got kids and they can take a couple F-bombs, definitely let them watch House. It's definitely, if I had a kid that was interested in horror, that's definitely something I would let them watch. Because it's not really offensive. It is frightening in a fun kind of Goosebumps on TV or Are You Afraid of the Dark kind of way. And it's something that I think that they could handle. I mean, I watched Gremlins when I was a kid, and that movie is terrifying in some points. And I watched, we were talking about it recently, The Neverending Story, which kids today are absolutely terrified by The Neverending Story, which I thought it was cute. Except for the very end, with the nothing. And that scared me every time, but I loved it. Yeah, I like I said, I think there's a place for all of these movies and an audience for all of these movies. And I can't say we saw something that was absolute shit and isn't worth your time. I feel like each of these movies is worth your time. If you can handle what's in them.
All right. I think that about wraps it up, unless you have anything else to add.
Yeah, check these movies out on Amazon Prime.
Love you, bitches. Stay spooky. See you next time.